Great to have you with us here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Hi, Larry Mueller here. Happy to have you along today as we take a look at gearing up for spring and summer running events, dealing with some of those aches and pains and sprains that might develop as we visit with our two guests, Bill Boisenault and Lori Tyne Brody. Bill, Associate Professor at the UW School of Medicine and Public Health, Senior Physical Therapist at the Spine Center at UW Hospitals and Clinics, and Lori Tyne Brody, Physical Therapist and Athletic Trainer with the UW Sports Medicine Spine Center. Great to have them here, and certainly if you have questions or comments as you're gearing up for summer or spring and summer, I hope you'll join us at 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org or post a question or a photo even on my Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. Bill, good to have you back.
Thank you. Good to be here on this blustery day.
Yeah, Lori, great to see
good
you.
Good to be
too.
Here as well.
Lots of folks in fact, we signed up for, my wife's going to run this half marathon in Florida and Disney in January. So that's the
fun.
Long range.
Okay.
And we're going to do, we were all three going to do it, but daughter Emily's a little too young. She's
a little young
eight.
For a half marathon.
Yeah, so so we're just going to do the 5K events.
Perfect.
She and I.
Perfect. But, so she's in what grade?
She is third.
In third grade, because I think it's starting in third grade, they have the program called Girls on the Run. Dane County, if you Google Girls on the Run and go to Dane County, girls aid in grades 3 to 5 can participate in this great program. It's a 10-week program. They meet twice a week, and it's designed to help build girls' self-esteem.
Hmm.
So there's sort of a didactic, educational component for girls, and then they run. And at the end of the program, they run a 5K race. So it's a really nice way to get young girls into a running program with other girls and with some really great mentors.
Yeah, coaching, supervision.
Coaching and lots of good stuff about, you know, heading off some of the pitfalls that happen to girls as they get into their teen years. And that's when they tend to drop out of sports and athletics.
Yeah.
So it's really important to get them started young and have a lot of positive feedback. It's a very positive and encouraging program. Yeah. It's great.
And the fact girls, you're looking ahead to January is, is great long-range planning. That doesn't always work out that way, but plenty of time to be ready.
Yeah, and it gives her an opportunity to build up her training slowly, which is important, to cross-train, to potentially build in some strength training as part of that. And if you're training for any kind of endurance activity, nutrition is also a critical component, making sure you're getting sufficient nutrition and the right kind of nutrition. Some carbohydrates, but definitely some protein as well, immediately following your workout, within 15 minutes of the conclusion of your workout.
And in the more immediate future, there are a lot of people who are going to be training for events like the Crazy Legs Run here in Madison, the Sit in the My Run. And there's a host of 5K runs.
Right.
Fun. Full half marathon, all kinds of them. And
yeah, the good news is because it was a mild winter, a lot of those folks got an early start. Hopefully they got an early start and they have a pretty good training base for these activities. So I think it's a great way to model for your kids. If you have kids, you know, a healthy lifestyle and regular exercise and the fun of participating in that kind of event. You know, setting a goal just like Renee has done, setting a goal and having, you know, your daughter watch her work toward that goal. Mm-hmm. I think it's positive in so many ways.
Well, David in Marshfield has a question for you, so let's go there. Hi, David.
Good afternoon.
Hi.
Hi. Well, I'm in my mid-30s, and, you know, I've been struggling now with a calf injury. And I was running kind of up a hill, and it pulled. Now, it's progressively gotten better since I've gotten off of running for a week and a half or so, but I was told try a compression calf sleeve or try running, training an actual racing flat. Have you heard anything?
Well, you know, for in a healthy calf, Those techniques would help to build up your calf, but I think they're too far on the aggressive training end of the spectrum, and I think probably right now you're more in the rehabilitation end of the continuum. So I think if you tried those things now, it would probably overload you and wouldn't help you recover. So I think you would need to back down. Are you feeling this up in the kind of the muscle belly of your calf or down in your Achilles tendon?
Oh, no, definitely on the upper.
In the upper? Okay.
Of the calf, yeah.
All right. So, and I presume you're doing the requisite stretching and things like that?
Yeah.
And
trying to stretch, you know, like we just started doing a more like a yoga stretch, a long stretch.
Okay.
And, you know, it seems to be getting better.
Okay.
But, you know, I guess what I'm curious about is once I'm healed, do I run in a compression calf sleeve?
I don't see that as being the key to your preventing this from coming back. I would say that the key is, you know, figuring out why it happened in the first place. Is it because you were fatigued? You know, running uphill is certainly going to put more stress on your calf muscles. It has to propel you farther through a longer range of motion against uphill, against gravity. So training would be the first thing that comes to my mind. Doing toe raises over the edge of a step at increased speed, doing more hill work where you have some defined hill training. You know, the racing flat is going to, it again, increase the range of motion you work through. Some people can tolerate that and some people won't tolerate it. And I have no idea where in the continuum you would fall. It's certainly something you could try, but you'd have to be very careful about it because it has probably an equal potential to make you worse as it would be to be helpful to you.
Okay.
So, and David, when you start up your running again, and Laurie, I'm assuming that running on a flat surface to start with before tackling hills would be a part of this transition?
Right. Yeah, if you start out training on a flat surface and then incorporate hills in a very controlled manner, such as I'm running flats for the bulk of my workout, but I'm going to also go to a hill and do some hill training so you can control the amount of hill you do, would be a reasonable way to get back into it.
Okay.
All right. Good luck. Thank you for calling. Appreciate it. We had Shelly email us and say that 6 weeks ago she tore her right ACL while skate skiing. She's going to rehab in hopes of holding off surgery. She's a competitive road cyclist and has been riding without issue. Will I do any damage to the meniscus or other ligaments if I hold off on surgery? Also, can I cross-country ski again without an ACL?
Let's see. How long is the show, Larry? what great questions those are. In terms of people who tear their ACL, you can generalize and say they fall into three groups. One group who are in high-demand sports, basketball, soccer, football, things like that, starting, stopping, cutting, who need to be reconstructed just because of the demands they put on their knee. There's a third of people who will do just fine because they're relatively sedentary and they don't need to have anything done other than some rehab. And then there's a third in the middle, which is probably where Shelley is, where you may do just fine if you modify your activity some. But there's always a risk that you're going to re-injure. Depending upon how unstable you are, if you're having episodes of instability, walking around your home, doing your daily activities, you know, picking up your bicycle, whatever it is, then you're going to be at risk for an injury, not necessarily in your sport, but just doing something, you know, screwing around in your yard and you step in a hole and boom. And if you do tear your meniscus, that's going to kind of press your hand on the surgery because when you start losing your meniscus, you start becoming more unstable. So if you're already unstable, you become more unstable. So it's reasonable to see how far you can get with rehab. You'll probably be fine cycling unless you get off your bike and step on an uneven surface and your knee gives. The cross-country skiing is going to be more problematic because of the rotation component and the single leg stance you have on your ski and the variable of the slippery surface. So you'll be at a higher risk. You might do fine with a brace. A brace can give you some good proprioception and can decrease your chances of falling. However, it won't protect you if you do fall. So Just a little bit more information. Talk to your physical therapist. Talk to your physician. Get a little more information from them as well. But that's kind of the quick answer.
And thanks very much for that email. You can also email us with your question. We're having some problems with our call screen right now, but we probably will get those fixed. And I believe we could even before I try something that would probably cause
before you start pushing buttons.
Right, exactly. But you don't know what you're doing. Right. So we tell our children, if you don't know what you're doing, don't push the button. With your hands from the keyboard.
Oh, man. Someone asked about if you're training for an endurance event. This is one thing I know that is quite a step up from what you've done previously. How much lead time should you give yourself to get ready? So let's say you've run 5Ks and now suddenly you want to do a full marathon or even a half marathon.
Well, I would say at a minimum, depending upon how big the step is, at least 3 months, to 6 months. And if you sit down with a trainer, if you belong to a gym or if you go to the local running club, or even if you looked online, you can find programs where people will lay out for you, if this is where you're at and this is where you want to be, then week one you should do this and week two this and week this, and they can lay out a program for you. But I would say if you're going to step it up significantly, I'd say a minimum of 3 to 6 months. If you're training for something like a marathon, right, I'd say at least 6 months to get your mileage up.
I was thinking of a friend who did the Ironman, but had the whole year before, I think he spent about a year because he couldn't swim. He wasn't even a swimmer when he started, and he hired a trainer, he and two or three other people.
Yeah. Well, that
hired
works
a trainer,
that,
and they worked with a trainer the whole year.
Yeah. Now, then I always do like to tell the story of a colleague of ours who will remain unnamed, who's a physical therapist who liked to do endurance events. And she decided she was going to do the Madison Marathon. And she didn't train for it at all. She just went and ran it. She said, I just saved myself hours and hours of training. Think of all the exposure I had to injury and all those hours of training. And I just saved myself that.
Yeah.
No, I'm not recommending that.
She is an aberration in a very positive way. But
that's just to point out for those, you'll hear people saying stories of, well, I didn't train like that, and I don't ever stretch, and I don't this and that. You have to realize there's a whole spectrum of people out there.
Yeah.
And genetically, some will be able to do stuff, and other people, they just don't have the genetic mustard to be able to push themselves like that.
Troy in La Crosse, I think we've got our phone situation taken care of here. Hi, Troy.
Hi.
Thanks for calling. What can we do for you?
Well, I've been training for the La Crosse Marathon on May 6th, and about 3 weeks ago, I got a shin splint in my right leg, enabling me to run since then. Before the injury, my longest run was 17 miles. My leg feels better since I stopped running, but it still hurts when I tried to run yesterday, and I don't want to further injure my leg before the race. And I'm wondering, what's the best thing I could do to train for the marathon in about 3 weeks?
Well, first of all, I hope you're going in to see somebody to look at the shin splint to see what's going on, because you don't want to just rest for 3 weeks and then go to the marathon and the first mile have this rear its ugly head again. So I'd get into a sports PT immediately and have them take a look at your shoes, at your gait, have them examine your shin and see what's going on and see if they can help you.
Yeah.
And then in terms of training, the good news is you should have a pretty strong training base. You've already run a 17-miler. You can kind of pick any activity that you like that will maintain your cardio. You can pick biking. Stationary biking would be fine. Deep water running is a great activity. So it's not going to maintain you musculoskeletally the same way, but it will maintain you cardiorespiratorily the same way. Is that a word? Cardiorespiratorily?
Yeah.
It'll maintain your cardiorespiratory system sufficiently to run the marathon, but it's not going to be the same musculoskeletally. You might want to go to something like biking, or if you can do a cross trainer, something that's weight-bearing, it's going to be a little closer to your marathon.
Yeah, some of the things to worry about with shin splints, it's just kind of a garbage can term. Mm-hmm. It means your shin hurts, but it can be a stress fracture.
Right.
It could be compartment syndrome. It could be a little tendonitis. And that's also, Troy, what you want to sort out because, you know, if it, there's potential for a stress fracture, then you've got to be more careful looking ahead to this race in 3 weeks. So this is a good time to go in.
Mm-hmm. Good luck. Thank you very much for calling. And Marlene and Racine may have something related or similar. Marlene, hi.
Hi. I guess I'm a beginner runner, and in the past when I've run only about 3 miles was my maximum, and then I laid off for a couple weeks. It was like almost the shin splint came back with a vengeance, even after just having a rest of about 3 weeks.
Well, that's
like going 3 miles.
Yeah. Yeah, that's kind of what we're saying. In most of these cases with overuse problems, rest alone is not the answer. Okay. There was something that caused it in the first place, and you need to get at the underlying problem, whether it's something biomechanically in how your builds are put together, musculoskeletally, if it has something to do with your running stride, your running shoe, your foot mechanics. I mean, there's a whole laundry list of things that could be causing this, and just resting isn't going to deal with the underlying problem. So that's why we suggest people go in and be examined so that you can, A, rehabilitate the problem, and B, get at the underlying problem and prevent it from coming back every time you start running. You know, running's a great activity for people who like it. It's a great lifetime sport. It's easy to do. You have a pair of shorts and shoes, and you can, you know, kind of do it anywhere.
Right.
So we really want to encourage people who enjoy that to continue in it. And if every time you go, you get shin splints, it's kind of a disincentive. So I'd really suggest going in and having all those things looked at to figure out the problem.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Marlene, when you go in, make sure you bring your running shoes and walking shoes in. Sometimes that can be helpful in terms of trying to figure out what is the underlying cause.
Yep.
Okay.
All right. Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate it, Marlene. Bill Boisenault and Lori Tyne Brody, our guests today as we talk about gearing up for spring and summer running and dealing with those aches and pains and sprains and strains. Larry Mueller here. Michelle Good, our on-air producer on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Taking a look at spring and summer events and gearing up for those athletic events and also dealing with some of the aches and pains and sprains and strains that come along with getting ready for events. Maybe you have something now that you'd like to talk about. If you do, give us a call at 1-800-642-1234, email at talk@wpr.org, or post on my Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. We have Lori had an email who says, I have a six-month-old and recently injured my lower back doing a yoga stretch for the lower back. What's the best way to protect and strengthen this area while having to lift a 20-pound baby?
Yeah.
What do you think, Bill?
A baby that's going to get heavier and more wiggly
as
time goes on here. Yeah, it is a challenge. Well, if I can assume, Lori doesn't mention anything about leg pain, numbness, tingling. So if I assume there's none of that, and if I also assume this has been relatively recent, it's important that Lori stays active and thinking in terms of the recovery of the back pain, doing some gentle stretching. A lot of the yoga poses or positions, they end up being multi-planar, where it's a combination of bending and twisting. And early on, it's better to stick to kind of a straight plane and not combine the twisting with it. It's okay to do twisting if it's twisting more in a neutral position. And also stretching in non-weight-bearing positions, so lying on the back, hands and knees, lying on the stomach, would be good poses and stretches to do. And then as she recovers, then she can go back to more of her usual routine. In terms of the lifting and to protect, the more that she can bend to reach or to lower with her knees, which I know is not always easy with some cribs the way they're designed or even a tub, and doing less bending at the back. There's times if you can split the distance up where if Lori's going to put the baby onto the floor, Lori can hold the baby close to her, kneel down, and then put the baby on the floor. And when picking her up from something low, kind of start kneeling, bring the baby close to the chest, and then come up using her legs from there. And, you know, the more help she can get with the bathing and things where you have to bend over that crib, would help. But staying active, walking, you know, as long as the pain's not sharp and as long as nothing is going into her legs.
You know, Bill, we tend to get questions about people who have been in yoga and maybe have hurt themselves. Are there things about yoga that people should be cautious about?
Yes. You know, generally, it's a really good thing and a really good activity. And with a good instructor, there tends to be less of this. But people should get into poses slowly, carefully, gently. It's not meant to be done ballistically. And I tell people, I want them more to think of coaxing tissue as opposed to stretching tissue. So just a mild to moderate stretch. Some folks feel, you know, no pain, no gain. They have to stretch really aggressively. And that's where sometimes they can get into trouble. Also, people can get injured coming out of poses that they have been in for, you know, 20 seconds or 30 seconds. And so coming out of changing positions and poses slowly and gradually can help prevent, you know, some tissue getting caught or pinched, you know, on the way up. So those are a few things that I've heard from people over the years.
Interesting. Tom in Green Bay has a question for you. Let's go there. Hi, Tom.
Hi. Good morning. I had a ski injury. My inside foot, when I was going up on a chairlift, got kicked over. My left foot got kicked over my right foot, and then the tip of my ski caught my hay bale on the way up, and my leg got twisted around.
Oh.
This was many years ago.
Ouch.
And I'm still having problems with it. Like when I went to kick a soccer ball, my knee pops out, and I've had an MRI of it, so there's just a little bit of arthritis in there. But even when I'm in the garden and I'm bending down for a long period of time and then I go, you know, like I get on my knees and I get up, it'll kind of pop and lock.
Is that in the front of your knee around your kneecap? Or is it deeper inside?
Well, I also get Baker's cyst.
Huh.
It's usually on the, it's like it'll get stuck and I have to pull it back. It hurts like heck. But then it'll pop in and it'll be stiff and sore, but it'll be having the mobility back again. But then I get a Baker's cyst if I do it real bad.
How long ago was your MRI?
About a year and a half, 2 years ago.
And has it worsened since then or stayed the same?
No, it stayed the same.
Yeah. Well, you know, the symptoms you describe sound more like a meniscus tear to me. With that kind of popping and catching and locking. And, you know, sometimes you can get locking from your kneecap, but that's pretty clearly in the front of your knee, and people are pretty aware that it's their kneecap when it is your kneecap that locks. Plus, a kneecap issue is not typically associated with the Baker's cyst. Baker's cyst is associated with things that are happening inside your joint. So that being said, let me say just a little bit about MRIs. MRIs are very specific. When they're well done, they are specific to the pathology you're looking for. So depending upon how the physician wrote the order and where you had the MRI done, it is possible that the MRI missed something. So if they were thinking, oh, maybe Tom has torn his ACL, and they did an MRI looking mostly at your ACL or your PCL, they possibly could have missed a meniscal tear.
Yeah, they kept on giving me a lot of exercises to do.
Yeah.
To strengthen, I guess, the side muscles or ligaments.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, that's all good. Exercises are going to be what help you. But if you're still having a lot of symptoms, you may want to get another opinion from somebody else. You know, the Baker's cyst is worrisome because it's just a sign that the inside of your knee is unhappy. And so you kind of want to figure out why that is and if something should be done about it.
Okay, I appreciate it.
Okay.
All right, thanks a lot for calling. And Skip in Milton, it's your turn. Hi, Skip.
Hi, thanks for having me on.
Sure.
Well, the problem is sort of twofold, and it could be related. I strained and perhaps partially tore a medial collateral ligament on my knee this winter. And it was quite painful. It's mostly healed. I've got to be careful because when I run, say, 4 or 5 miles, then it hurts a little bit, but not too bad. So I'm doing more biking and other things that don't seem to bother the knee. But also, which might be related, might be partially the cause of that, I don't know. Probably it wasn't, but I've got a bunion on my foot, on the same foot, same leg, and it's a classic bunion. My great toe goes in, thinking this was the problem because I've got foot pain that comes around the top and to the back. I did have it checked out. A doctor took a look at it, referred me to the podiatrist, and we're looking at the x-rays. I'm not going to go with a full bunionectomy. I'm going with a hallux limitus, which he thought might be the bigger problem, what's causing most, and it's a less of a surgery to do it. There's a chipped bone in there, which answered my question of why did my toe lock up once upon a time. It was because of that bone chip, but there's a bone spur on top, and it's getting bigger, and it won't quit on its own, so that's going to be removed. And wondering, I've never had foot surgery, but how to go back about it, and would bicycling be a bad thing to start out with? Obviously, I'm not going to be running.
Right. Bicycling would probably be a good activity because it's going to help lubricate your knee, so it'll be good for your knee. It keeps your knee within a range that's good for your MCL injury, and it will also help with your foot and ankle motion. Your big toe joint will be relatively stable, I would think, on the pedal with just a little bit of motion, so it should be good for that. And I'd certainly check with the surgeon and ask his or her opinion about that, but I would think that bicycling would be a fine alternative. Additionally, the pool, like deep water running or bicycling in the pool, would be a good cross-training activity for you as well.
Okay, yeah. Very good. Thank
skip,
you.
Skip one other thing. When you, after the surgery and you recover from the surgery, being referred to a physical therapist so they can examine your foot and ankle, bunions don't just happen, especially with that deformity. And so if the surgery corrects it, but what caused the deformity isn't addressed, then there's a chance that it'll just come back again. Sometimes people need orthotics. Sometimes people need, you know, muscle imbalances taken care of. So once you're through the surgery and recovered, you need to make sure you get good range of motion back at that big toe joint, but really look at that entire lower quarter and try to figure out what might have led this to just starting with you from the beginning.
Mm-hmm. There you go. Good luck. Thank you again for calling. Appreciate it, Skip. Well, Rachel in Waukon, Iowa has a question. Let's go there. Hi, Rachel.
Hi, how are you guys?
Great. Thanks for calling.
Sure. I have two 15-year-old boys, and they're both very tall. They've grown very fast. And one of them suffers a lot from plantar fasciitis. And we went to the foot doctor, and he looked at it, and he gave them inserts. And my son uses inserts in his tennis shoes, basketball shoes, dress shoes, and I'm trying to get him into the golf shoes, but his feet still bother. And I'm not quite sure how to help him. I think soaking his foot helps a little bit, but.
So are they really sore first thing in the morning? It's classic plantar fasciitis.
I don't know if it's
okay.
The first thing in the morning, but
okay.
After he's been on them.
Yeah. Well, the first thing is to make sure that it is truly plantar fasciitis, and I guess you saw the podiatrist,
yes,
who's confirmed it. But really the classic symptom of plantar fasciitis is after you've been in one position for a long time, and most classically it's in bed at night,
mm-hmm,
first thing in the morning when you step down, horrible pain.
Okay.
So if he gets out of bed in the morning and he says, "Well, my feet feel pretty great," you know, first thing out of the morning after resting all night.
He's not limping big time.
Yeah. And he's, then you may want to rethink the diagnosis.
Okay.
If he hasn't been to physical therapy, I would go with that next. And I know we have also an email from a runner who has been through physical therapy for plantar fasciitis and eventually had surgery for it. Now, typically surgery is a very, very last line intervention.
Right.
far and away, most people don't undergo surgery. But there are some other physical therapy things that can be done for it. First, is it both feet?
Yes.
Okay. Is doing an examination to see if there's anything from an infrastructure point of view that's perpetuating these symptoms. Mm-hmm. So any other stretching, strengthening kinds of things, mechanics and how he moves, mm-hmm. that he can change to decrease the loads on his feet. And then some specific interventions such as, some plantar fascia specific stretching, the massaging with, a golf ball, tennis ball, a water bottle frozen into ice, to night splints.
Okay.
There are also taping techniques that for some people who don't do well with orthotics, that the taping techniques work well as well. Mm-hmm. And a physical therapist should be able to instruct you how to do those.
Okay.
So there's some other things out there that can be tried.
Does this go away? I mean, will he outgrow it in some fashion? I mean, he's 6 foot. 3 and we're size 14.
And he's 15?
He's 15. Yeah, their dad is really tall.
Ooh, yeah. I wouldn't sit around and wait for it to just go away.
No.
Okay.
So he's probably, once you get it, you kind of tend to be predisposed to getting it again, and it may be because that's how he moves, okay. maybe because he has it for a long time now, and that sets him up for it to come back.
Okay.
But I'd intervene more than just sticking an arch support in his shoe at this point.
Okay, great.
Good luck. Thank you.
Thank you.
And you mentioned Christy, the former runner who's had the plantar fasciitis issue and had an endoscopic release. That's what it
is. Yeah. Yeah, so probably a release of the plantar fascia. Mm-hmm. And she wants to work towards a half marathon. Is it a bad idea? I don't know that I can say. Basically, she's going to have to road test it. She can start out walking and work up to a walk-jog program and see how her foot tolerates it. But if she has pain again, I'd probably back off. If I haven't been to PT since surgery, I'd probably go and have them look at my mechanics, see if mechanics have changed, see if there's any support they can offer, and maybe guide her through a transition into a running program and see how it goes.
Yeah, she needs a really good arch support. Yeah. Plantar fascia, it's there for a reason.
Yeah.
And when we walk or run and we toe off on that side, plantar fascia pulls tight, and that helps provide a really solid structural arch through the muscles I can work across. And so when the plantar fascia is cut, you lose that stability. And so it sets her up for developing other problems. So transitioning slowly and just trying to find out where is that threshold. But, probably an orthotic, a really good orthotic, may give her a little better chance.
Yeah, and depending upon where she lives, there are places that were physical therapy clinics that have runner's clinics.
Yes.
And she might be able to find a clinic there where they can do a good exam of her.
Kathy in Kansasville, your turn. Hi, Kathy.
Hello. How are you?
Good. Thank you for calling.
I have a knee injury that I got doing exercises originally. Got some tendonitis on the inside of my right knee. And then about 6 months ago, I fell while doing swing dancing and stretched out my left leg straight but bent my right knee all the way back. And now it's giving me a lot of problems, and it just doesn't seem to want to completely go away. It's starting to interfere with sleep and getting in and out of the car. I'm wondering, what do I do? Where do I go to get some help with this?
Well, have you been seen? Has anyone looked at your knee yet at this point in time?
I had gone to a chiropractor, and he had given me some relief, but it didn't really last.
Okay. I would either start with my primary care physician or physical therapy, depending upon where Kansasville is. That's in Wisconsin? Isn't that terrible?
Yeah, that's in southeastern Wisconsin.
Okay.
Nobody knows where it is.
I'd never heard of it.
Well, we do now. Thank you.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So, if your insurance will allow you to go directly to a physical therapist, I would go to a physical therapy clinic where they work with active individuals, an outpatient orthopedic clinic, look for a sports or orthopedic clinical specialist, and have somebody take a look at it and examine your knee, because it should be getting better. It should not be getting worse. So the fact that it's now disturbing your sleep, having trouble getting in and out of a car, there's some kind of pathology going on there that needs to be identified and treated. So I'd get into the medical system, whatever is the most convenient way for you to get in at this point.
Good luck. Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate your call. And Connie in Windsor, hello to you. Hi, Connie.
Hi.
What's on your mind?
Well, last winter, on one of the very few days that we had to go ice skating, I was pulling my 1-year-old grandson around on the ice in a cute little plastic sled. And instead of watching where I was going, I was turning around, making sure he wasn't falling out of the sled, which ultimately led to a little crash onto the ice. And the brunt of my fall landed right on my right knee, on the tip of the bone of your right knee.
Ouch.
On the outside.
Oh.
And it really hurt. And I felt around. It didn't seem like anything was broken or even strained. I think it just bruised the heck out of it. But now it's April, and it still has a little bruise on there, and it still hurts, and it looks kind of more pointy than the other one. And I'm just wondering, it hasn't gotten worse. It has gotten better. But do I still ice it? What do I do at this point?
Well, are you able to do everything you want to do?
Yep.
Okay. I would get in to see, I'd get into a PT and get into, have them examine you and give you a rehabilitation program. Chances are, just from the sounds of things, you probably had a little underlying arthritis that you stirred up. The little bump is probably a little bit of a bony response to the trauma of being hit there. And so you'll always be a little bit vulnerable in that spot to some soreness, or if you bump it or something, it's probably going to hurt a little bit more. But just getting in and making sure you have a good strength in your hips and in your thigh muscles to prevent any decline in your knee would be a good idea. If it still hurts, some icing, and again, having a PT look at it to figure out why it still hurts. Because, you know, theoretically, whatever the bump or trauma was, you know, that's gone. So it's some residual from that that's still bugging you.
Yeah, and if ice is all you needed, you should have been better by now. And the fact you're not, again, there could be some underlying issue that the therapist can help tease out with you and give you some suggestions of whether it's self-massage, you know, deep massage, or some other stretching or strengthening that may be needed as well in this area.
Good.
Okay.
Good luck. Thank you for calling. Appreciate it. Bill Boisenault and Lori Tyne Brody, physical therapist at the University of Wisconsin. Bill with the UW School of Medicine and Public Health. Lori, UW Sports Medicine and Spine Center. Our guests here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Talking about getting ready and gearing up for spring and summer events, running events, physical events, and also dealing with those aches and pains and sprains and strains with our two guests, Bill Boisenault and Lori Tyne Brody. Larry Mueller here. Michelle Good, our on-air producer. Thank you so much for listening in. Questions at call us at 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org or post on my Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. And Lisa has an email question about what she should be eating or taking supplement-wise while she prepares for a marathon. She says, I can't find anything specifically regarding metabolic, joint, or osteo concerns of perimenopausal female runners. What should a runner in my age group address in meal and snack planning?
Okay. Boy, there's a number of things. In terms of the perimenopausal piece, and osteo concerns, you know, it would be the standard stuff that your physician would probably recommend, and that is vitamin D, probably higher doses of vitamin D than one normally thinks, or that is expressed via RDA on the bottles, and you should probably talk with your physician about that. But they are recommending higher doses now. Calcium for your bone health, and for your joint health, fish oils So, you know, whether it's in your diet or via a supplement, such as the Core Omega fish oil supplement is a high quality supplement, or just getting those, you know, heavy fish oil, salmon, those kinds of things in your diet, as well as glucosamine, glucosamine and chondroitin, that are a supplement for joint health. Would be a useful supplement to take. And then protein, keeping protein and balancing your running with strength training. So the strength training and the protein go together to provide the muscle strength infrastructure to support your joint and bone health. So the muscle piece is really important. So the strength training and the protein, you know, protein within 15 minutes of finishing your program is key. So a good, you know, banana with peanut butter or apple with peanut butter, you know, a carbohydrate, a bagel with, you know, peanut butter or some other nut spread or with tuna or hummus, something like that. It's a good post-activity snack.
Dave in Heartland has a question for you. Hi, Dave. Thank you for calling.
Yeah, hi. Thanks for taking my call. I'm 65 years old, recently retired, and I want to get involved with bicycling. And I'm in relatively good shape. I was slightly overweight and lost about 10 pounds recently and want to lose another 10. So I just need some recommendations on what type of exercising I should be doing to prepare for some long-distance bicycling.
Yeah, it's a great question and a good time to ask such a question before you really get hot and heavy into this. One of the things, Dave, is to make sure that the bike fits you well. It's like runners need to need shoes that fit their feet well. And so if you haven't, you know, take your bike into a reputable bike shop and have them get you on the bike and look at the size of the frame, the handlebars, and see whatever they can adjust to make sure it fits you as well as possible.
Well, I'm fortunate that my son used to work for Trek. So
beautiful.
He has fitted my bicycle.
Okay. Well, that's a big step. And then from there, it's similar to recommendations we've given to runners more so on the shows so far is to transition. It's important for you to do some cross training. Don't only bike. Mix biking with whether it's swimming, walking, running. So you stress the back and the legs differently. And then for the biking, if you're looking for some longer runs where there's lots of hills, then part of your training program needs to be some hill work to help prepare your back and the legs for that stressful activity. So we talked before that for a runner, you know, for a marathon, hopefully you're giving yourselves 4 to 6 months, if you're starting from scratch. And so before you take on something really long distance or intense, hopefully you've got at least a couple months, maybe 3 months to help prepare for it. But gradually increase the distance, increase the intensity, increase the hills, and just see how your body holds up. And then
okay,
sounds like you should do well, though, in terms of how you're approaching this.
Yeah, I'm aiming for a 50-mile event in September.
Yeah,
oh, perfect,
okay.
Perfect. Okay. Perfect. That's great.
Yeah.
Good luck with it. Thanks, Dave.
Okay, thank you.
And Nancy in Watertown. Hi.
Hi. Well, I've for almost a year been having pain in my wrist that they're saying is probably tendonitis. I had Declarvin tendonitis a couple years ago, and that resolved, and this is a little different. I've been seeing a physical therapist for a couple months, and we worked on this and shoulder pain, doing slides, moving my fingers, and wearing splints, and trying to ice it 2-3 times a day, even though that aggravates arthritis in my thumbs and fingers. But there's been no great improvement, and she's wondering if this can come from my C7 disc problem, herniation.
Yeah, it is possible. Are you having any tingling or numbness with this?
Not really.
Okay.
Not significant. It's a real acute pain in the wrist, in the top part of the wrist.
Okay. Is there a pattern of what brings this pain on and then how you can get some relief?
If I just don't move it whatsoever for long periods of time, it works. But it seems the minute I use it,
okay.
It's back.
Okay. All right. And then when you move your head or neck or be in a computer for hours with, you know, if your posture isn't quite right, is there a pattern that you have more neck pain when the wrist is worse?
I'm not sure. I know the wrist sort of overwhelms all the other pain that I've had for years with the C7 herniation.
Yes, yes.
And problems with that, but you know, the wrist is just really an acute sharp pain so often.
Okay. Is there any swelling in the wrist?
Sometimes on the top of my near my wrist, on the top of my arm.
Okay. All right. Well, the answer question, it is possible that it's related to your neck. And it's something you're having shoulder problems as well, which again may tie into the neck. If that's the case, if the therapist screens your neck, takes it through movements and special tests and see if that brings on any of your shoulder pain and or your wrist pain. Also, there's like a straight leg raise for the arm that could be done. And if that movement provokes the shoulder and or wrist pain, then at least part of it is coming from your neck. But if they test your neck, they do the straight leg raise for the arm, and that doesn't touch your wrist at all, then it's more likely a local problem. Was there an injury that started this off a year ago?
No. And, you know, with having for about 10 years the pain in my shoulders and neck, you know, from the C7,
right.
I was just wondering, can tendonitis go away?
Well, yes, but it can be, you know, longer it's around, the tougher it is to get rid of. You know, we've had lots of callers over the years where, you know, when it gets to be a year, you know, 6 months, 12 months, yeah. 18 months out, yes, people can recover, but it's a really slow process. You really have to protect the area, and that's where the splints would have come into play. And that's why it sounds like what you've been doing, if it was a local wrist problem only, with no secondary factors, you should have been at least somewhat better at this stage.
Mm-hmm.
And so looking up the arm into the neck seems to be a logical place to go.
Mm-hmm.
And you mentioned multiple joints. Do you have problems in any other joints in your hips or lower extremities?
Oh, I have a hip problem, but nothing significant compared to
this. Okay. Because you just want to rule out systemic problems that may be affecting multiple joints.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay.
All right. Thank you for calling. And Betty and Baraboo. Hi.
Hello. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
Over the last couple of months, I've been having this weird sensation on the top of my legs. Mm-hmm. Sometimes it feels like little burning, prickly feeling, and sometimes it feels like there's water dripping on my legs. And I don't know. What that could be.
But it's in both legs?
Yes.
Okay. And when you say tops, is it your quads? Is it your shin area, top of your foot?
No, it's on the top of my legs, like where my lap is.
Okay.
Okay.
Okay, so up high by the hips?
Yes.
Okay. All right. So does it extend below knees at all?
No, it does not.
Okay. All right. Anything happened 3-4 months ago? I mean, you change anything activity-wise, an injury, a new medication?
No medication. The only thing I can think of is that my job, I sit a lot all day long, and I'm wondering if it's maybe something lack of exercise.
So it's possible. So do you have the sensation all the time, or does it come and go?
It comes and goes, and about 2 weeks ago, it started on the back of my leg, kind of where my buttocks and the top of my leg meet.
Okay.
Yeah, it's been going there, too.
Okay. All right. Is it worse at the end of the workday?
No, routinely? It just comes and goes. I can't pinpoint when it would occur.
Okay. So it's not like the pattern is there is no pattern.
There is no pattern.
Yeah. Have you seen your physician at all over the last 3 months for this?
No.
Okay. I think this is the time to do it, and especially since the last couple of weeks it seems to be spreading. You know, I feel a little differently if you told me I get up in the morning, I feel good. Midway through my workday, I get this sensation. The more I sit, the worse it gets. I leave work, I start walking, I feel better. But I'm not hearing that from you. And the fact that it's both legs, what your physician will look at is, one, is there something systemic that may be causing this, something circulatory or with the nervous system? Sometimes issues in the spine, you know, can cause, you know, symptoms in this area. But, you know, the location and how you describe it sounds like something nerve or maybe vascular. So I'd go see your physician and be very clear exactly when this started and what it feels like to you and location, and see what they can come up with for you.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks a lot for calling. Robert in West Allis emailed and did his first Birkebeiner last year, wondering about a good training program for something like the Berkey. He also strained his calf and continues to have Achilles tenderness.
Okay, well, let's start with the calf and the Achilles tenderness. So, you know, a calf strain is different from Achilles tendonitis. So I don't know if he's got two things going on or if he's lumped those two into one thing. But if you're tender to touch in your Achilles, you probably have an Achilles tendinopathy. And for that kind of problem, we recommend a higher load eccentric training program. And the eccentric is the negative or lowering half of the muscle contraction. So if you have a 5-pound weight in your hand and you do an elbow curl, the up is the concentric and the lowering is the eccentric. So for your Achilles, what we would recommend, if it was, for example, his right Achilles, that he go up on 2 feet, then lift up his left foot and lower himself down with his right. So up with two, down with one. So that's where we start, and then you start from a flat surface, move to over the edge of a step, and then add weight, such as in a backpack. And also progressively increasing the speed. So that's kind of where you go with that. And as you recover from that, you can think about training for the next year. What do you need? You need cardiorespiratory base. So any kind of exercise that maintains your cardiorespiratory base. You may want to cross train by biking. You can work out in a fitness center on a cross training machine that'll be weight bearing. You want to do some upper body so you get your lats and shoulders for your cross country skiing. So swimming is a good activity. So any kind of cross training activities is great. And then you're going to want strength training and as well as some other core muscle activity.
And we'll talk some more with our guests after a quick look at the news. Stay with us. Great to have you with us here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Larry Mueller here talking about gearing up for spring and summer running events and dealing with those aches and pains with our two guests, UW physical therapist Bill Boisenault and Lori Tyne Brody. Thank you for listening in. And again, join in with your own questions at 1-800-642-1234. And just in terms of training, it was a question about training for an event like the Birkebeiner.
Right, right. And we talked about you really think about your training both from the cardiovascular, cardiorespiratory perspective, keeping that your wind up, and then you have the musculoskeletal component, and that is the muscles that you use and how you use them. So whether or not you're pounding, whether it's repetitive, whether you're jumping, cutting, starting, stopping, all those things. So, you know, we talked about ways to maintain your cardiorespiratory endurance, and then you want musculoskeletal, so you want baseline strength, that is strength training, especially in core muscle groups in your back, the muscles that you use to pull, the single leg stance where you're weight bearing on one leg, where you really want strong hips and quads. So, you know, having a good strength training program with some diversity.
We have Jill in Grafton with a question for you. Hi, Jill.
Hi, Larry. Thanks so much for taking my call.
Sure.
Bill, Lori, have a question. I run. I should maybe say I jog. I'm not the fastest jogger or runner, but I like to do it, and it's good stress relief. My biggest problem is I usually run between 3 and 4 miles. At about mile 2.5 to 3, my toes are falling asleep, and it then moves up to my entire foot. I have stop, must take my shoe off, usually only my right foot, and massage my foot, mostly in the arch, to get feeling back. I will have my laces loose, I'll have them tight, I've tried all different things, just wondering if you have any suggestions or options for me.
Boy, that's a tough question. Have you tried the lower profile, like the barefoot running type shoes, or the very light shoes, like the Nike Freeze?
I have tried not the Nike Free, but I have tried one of their very light cross trainers.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, extremely light. And that, I still had the issue with that.
Okay. And then anything like the Vibram 5-finger glove kind of thing.
I can't get over the look of it. I just...
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I hear you. I hear you. Yeah, you know, I mean, the fact that the way you relieve this is to take your shoes off, to me, is the biggest clue that it has to do with the compressive force of your shoe on your foot.
Okay.
Do you get it with any other shoes or any other activities?
No other activities. Only with running. I'm very active in my job. I walk probably close to 7 miles a day on my job.
Okay. And do you get any numbness in your feet with that?
Never.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, well, and you know, you walk heel toe, you have the 2 foot, I mean, there's, you know, mechanical differences between running. You know, I can't quite get past the issue that it's related to your shoe on your foot. So I guess I would say to continue to try different shoes.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing to think about is trying to change your running style. Instead of running with the heel toe traditional stride, you might try using more of a barefoot running style and to see if that makes a difference where you land toe, heel, toe.
Okay.
So pretending, thinking like you're barefoot and running like that and just see if you have any difference. Other than that, I don't know if Bill has any suggestions, but it's not an unusual complaint. We've had calls in the show in the past where people's feet fall asleep with different activities. And my guess is it just has to do with the neurovascular aspects of your foot and just the shoe and the movement pattern is putting pressure on a nerve that that's causing your feet to go to sleep.
Now, Jill, you haven't mentioned pain. I mean, do you have any shin splints or calf pain at all with this?
No, I don't. I used to get shin splints really bad just with walking, but I just upped my water intake, and it seemed to really help.
Okay.
So I haven't had any shin splints or calf pain.
Okay. And when your toes fall asleep, is it the tops of the toes, bottoms of the toes, or is it
bottom of my toes, yeah.
The bottom. Okay. All right. One of the things I think, I'm not sure if I have anything more to add to what Lori said, except, you know, if you continue to try experimenting with shoes or this barefoot running style and it doesn't change, maybe going to a runner's clinic, mm-hmm. at a sports medicine clinic where you bring your typical shoes in or the shoes you've tried and, you know, they can examine you, watch you run, you know, videotape you run and then examine you after the tingling starts. And see if they can figure out if there's a particular nerve that's getting entrapped or, you know, at some threshold with your running activity.
Any ideas of it being somewhat related to arch, or is it strictly you think it's just the compression issue?
You know, it's unlikely. Well, it's possible to be related to your arch. It could be a tarsal tunnel issue, and that is related to your foot biomechanics, which can be related to your arch. It's all interconnected. So, you know, if you tried an arch support where it changed the alignment at your subtalar joint, and if it is tarsal tunnel, it might open up that tarsal tunnel some. So it's certainly something you could try.
It's an easy place to start.
Yeah, I kind of figured you tried all those things, but that was probably an incorrect assumption.
I've tried different arch supports, but yeah. I'm willing to try a few more before I have to get those goofy looking shoes.
Yeah.
Okay.
Just run at night and no one will see.
Yeah.
Good idea.
Thanks, Jill.
All right, thanks. Thank you. Good luck.
And Kathy in Arborvita. Hello.
Oh, hello. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I fell on February 10th on ice, and I went into urgent care, and they diagnosed it with a break. And then I went back a week later, and it was re-x-rayed, and they came out with a sprain. So for 6 weeks, I wore a brace from the palm of my hand up to almost the full forearm. In the last 3 weeks, I can take that off when I sleep at night. I still have tingling in 3 of my fingers on my hand. And when I wake up during the night or sleeping during the night without the brace on, my hand swells up and it falls to sleep.
Okay.
The week to go with wearing the brace during the day.
So, Kathy, the pain in your wrist, is it thumb side or little finger side?
Little finger side. It's the middle finger, the ring finger, and my little finger that are numb.
Okay.
They get tingling. And for instance, like if you want to go snap your fingers to make a snap,
yep.
I feel it feels like a knife going down the top of my arm, like I hit my crazy bone.
Okay.
Oh.
All right. And I'm assuming when you fell, you reached out with that hand?
Behind me, or to the side of me. Yeah, my hand went down flat.
Okay. All right. Well, a couple things. I'm glad they ruled out fracture, and it sounds like they have based on that second X-ray. You know, there's two nerves that cross the front of the hand, the ulnar nerve, which is on the little finger side. Typically, it doesn't innervate, provide sensation for the middle finger, but the little finger and the ring finger, yes. And you also have the median nerve, which is our carpal tunnel nerve. But the other thing that you may have irritated is something from your neck. That could be giving you the pins and needles in the distribution you mentioned. Any neck stiffness or pain along with this?
No.
Okay. All right. Well, the splint is designed to help protect the soft tissues, and it should also help protect the nerves in that area. It sounds like it's been about 10 weeks. About
nine. It'll be 10 this coming Friday.
Okay. All right. When was the last time you went in to see the physician for this?
The end of February.
Okay. It's time to go back, and it's time to let them know what's changed and what hasn't changed, and you need to mention the location of the tingling, the swelling. If you go in, there's no swelling, make sure you let them know where it is, and have him screen locally the wrist and hand, but also to examine your neck and just make sure that none of this is related to your neck.
Okay. My hand swells up slightly, but when I get up in the morning, I cannot make a fist. I cannot pull my fingers in.
Okay.
By an hour or two later, I can do that.
Okay. And this was not, you had none of this before the fall, is that correct?
Correct.
Okay. Any swelling in your other hand or your feet when you get up?
No.
Okay. Hmm. All right. What would be ideal is if you can see your physician first thing in the morning, so that they can maybe appreciate the swelling and examine you when that's present.
Okay.
And see if they can put these pieces together for you. But it's time to go back in.
Mm-hmm. But that's a great idea about getting that early appointment.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Definitely. Good luck, Kathy. Thank you for calling. Ben sent an email asking about ultrasound devices. What are your opinions of them? Are they effective for healing a sore Achilles tendon, for example?
Well, in terms of ultrasound devices, you have to distinguish whether you're talking about diagnostic ultrasound, because ultrasound is being used more often now in musculoskeletal medicine to diagnose certain conditions, or if you're talking about it therapeutically, where they've used ultrasound for many, many years as a form of deep heat for various musculoskeletal conditions. I am not a fan of therapeutic ultrasound, particularly for Achilles. The deep heat can be problematic in perpetuating the pain and inflammation that we see. So I wouldn't recommend it in that case. There are specific cases where it may be useful, and you'd have to take those on a case-by-case basis and discuss them with your healthcare provider.
And Gabe sent an email stating he's 53 and two chiropractors advised him to walk instead of run. Is this just advice for older people in general? I don't think so.
Oh, no, I don't think so either. There's probably specific reasons. If you're seeing chiropractors, I'm guessing they were healthcare providers for Gabe, and they probably recommended that to him for whatever reasons they found when they examined and treated him. So I would probably follow that advice, but I would say it is not general advice for all people. It should be, your exercise program should be individualized for you.
Right. And if Gabe is going back again, he should ask them why. And there could be a very good reason related to his back or hip joints, or but that's a fair question to ask his practitioners.
Michael in La Crosse has an email question. I'm participating in an annual multiple sclerosis fundraiser, Walk MS. It's a walk, not a run, but Any cautions for walkers? And why is having a massage therapist on site for the walk always so popular?
He really has to ask that question?
Right. I'll start with the first one. In terms of, can walks be problematic? Because it's a good question. We've been talking mainly about biking and running and the Berkey. And where people can get in trouble with a walk, if they haven't been doing lots of walking, especially on hills, if people are walking on flat surfaces and you do a walk like this and there's lots of hills up and down, that's when people can start getting our friend the shin splints or some calf discomfort. And so if to knowing the route, and if there are quite a few hills, then do some, whether it's stair climbing, if there aren't any hills locally, or you know, do some training with hills, and that'll help prevent some of the soreness. And just the massage, the muscles get tight, the massage will help with circulation and can help decrease some of that post-activity soreness.
We turn to Mary and Eau Claire next. Hi, Mary.
Hi. What? I have a question about tennis elbow.
Okay.
I've had it for over 2 months now, and I've done some physical therapy. They did some ultrasound, massage, and that kind of thing. It doesn't seem to change much. It doesn't get really much worse, but it isn't getting better, and I'm wondering how long I should expect this to go on.
Are you still in physical therapy, Mary?
Not currently.
Okay.
I'm not doing it right now.
Did they do any strengthening exercises with you?
They did give me a couple exercises with a weight,
okay,
lowering my arm, you know, and then bringing it up with the other hand, the weight, so that I don't come up with the weight but just go down with the weight.
Okay, and are you doing that?
Well, I did it for a while. I've been a little lax on that lately because it didn't seem to do any good.
Okay,
so.
And can I ask you how much weight you were using?
5 pounds.
Okay.
Because I ordinarily do weights, and I also do push-ups. I had been doing push-ups.
Okay.
I was off on that also.
Okay. I would probably go back to that exercise, and I'd probably up the weight.
Oh, okay.
So it may be that the weight wasn't high enough to really have an effect. The research is pointing to that lowering kind of exercise, but at a fairly high level. In fact, it may be more than a little uncomfortable as you do it.
Yeah, I found that.
Yeah. So if you started out with 5 pounds and you stayed with 5 pounds, then that's only phase one. You have to increase the weight.
Okay.
So you have to keep going up, up, up on the weight. And, you know, if you stick with it religiously and continue increasing the weight, you know, in 4 to 6 weeks, you should be better.
Okay.
So I'd get back on that, and you really have to be diligent about it. So if you're gonna jump in and you're gonna go through the pain of doing it, you really should just stick with it.
Keep at it.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. And if Mary, if after 4 to 6 weeks you're not any better, then going back in and have them examine your neck. Sometimes there can be a neck component to this tennis elbow presentation. So if the therapist hadn't screened your neck already. Hopefully this will take care of it for you, but if not, someone should look at your neck, too.
Good luck. Thank you for calling. Gary in Shorewood, it's your turn. Hi, Gary.
Hi. I was playing pickleball in Florida January 4th without a good warm-up, and I pulled my Achilles tendon, and as a result of it, I attended 18 PT sessions. It feels good now. I can still feel something's down there, but I'm wondering what exercises might I do to help a non-reoccurrence to occur?
Well, let me ask you this. You went to 18 PT sessions. Do those PTs teach you any of those things?
Well, I did have exercises there that
okay.
I was working on at the end
okay.
As I was getting better.
Okay.
Are you suggesting that I should continue with those? Those would be appropriate to stop a reoccurrence?
Typically, yes. Were they a toe raise kind of a
yep.
thing? Okay.
Yeah, leaning against a door frame and keeping the foot flat on the floor and extending or stretching the
okay.
Achilles and
yep.
standing on a stair and dropping down and some of those types.
Yeah, Yeah,
I'd over the toes, that type of
thing. Yeah, I'd stick with those. I'd stick with the stretching. I'd stick with the over the edge of the step. If you're going back to relatively vigorous activities, I would vary the speed of those exercises, of the toe raise, over the edge of the step exercise. Some slower repetitions with higher weight, some some lighter, higher speed toe raises, a variety of those things. Combining squatting with toe raising, things like that.
Yeah, and I had, I'm going to call it the electric shock on the little pads.
Yep.
And I also had the ultrasound, which you weren't recommending, but it seemed like the combination of those two plus the exercises got me going, coming back, but it took a long time for rehabilitation, and I don't want to tear that Achilles.
Right. It does take a long time, and you were right on, you don't want to tear it, so... Yeah.
Good luck.
I will continue with the ones that they suggested and keep it strong so I can start playing again.
Excellent. All right. Sounds good. Good luck, Gary. And Betsy in Wisconsin Dells. Hi to you.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I'm 48 years old, and I'm a competitive swimmer on a master's team. And I just read a pretty startling statistic about how many swimmers over their lifetime complain of some pretty serious problems with their shoulders, not surprisingly, rotator cuffs and so on. And so I'm just wondering, I don't have any such injury, and sort of like the last caller, I'm just wondering what your experts might recommend for ensuring that I protect that joint, because obviously it does get a lot of wear and tear. I swim probably 300 miles a year, something like that. So it's a lot of repetitive use.
Okay, keeping your rotator cuff strong, so shoulder rotation exercises. You know, again, there's a number of exercises out there. So, you know, if you have the wherewithal, I'd see a PT who's well-versed in swimming. You're in the Dells. We have some folks here in our sports medicine center that are very strong in training swimmers. So rotator cuff strengthening, keeping your chest or your pectoral muscles loose so that you don't develop that rounded shoulder appearance that you often see in swimmers that comes from tightness in front and weakness in the back. Strengthening your strengthening your scapular muscles, which is really good for women and posture as we age additionally because of the forward bend and the thoracic spine that tends to happen. So really opening up, and I presume you're swimming, are you swimming multiple strokes?
Yes, I swim all four competitively.
Okay, yeah, so the backstroke is going to help with that, so you're not always on your stomach.
Okay. That's my best stroke.
Okay, all right, so that's going to be good. So the strength training, the flexibility, and I thought of something else, and now it's just gone.
Okay,
so
while you're thinking,
yeah.
Tied to the flexibility, Betsy, I like have people working with a foam roller. So not only are you doing the muscle stretching, you know, the pecs, but just to mobilize the thoracic spine and rib cage, the more mobility you get through that area, the less stress falls on your shoulders. And so if you're unfamiliar with using a foam roller, again, a therapist in one visit can show you a variety of things to do that would help with, you know, mobility in that region.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess the other thing was watching the hand paddle use, because if you have any kind of flaw in your stroke, it will exacerbate it.
Yeah.
Right. Okay, that's all really helpful. Thank you so much.
Thanks so much for calling. And in just 40 seconds or so, can you tell us how to deep water run? Somebody, Diane from Pepin, wants to know.
Well, typically we put people with a belt on to start off with, and you basically get in the deep end of the pool and you do a running bicycling motion. You can add resistance to that by putting things on your feet like flippers or ankle fins or buoyant cuffs to give you a little bit more resistance or challenge. I typically recommend interval type training like you might on land, high speed, slow speed, doing sprints, things like that. And as you get better, get rid of the belt.
Sounds like a plan. And you've answered a lot of questions today, the two of you, and it was great. And you're back again on May 21st, I think I have.
Fantastic.
Yes, we are. Look forward to it.
Well, thank you both very much for being with us today. And they'll be back again on May 21st. Bill Boisenall, associate professor at the UW School of Medicine and Public Health, senior physical therapist at the Spine Center Physical Therapy Clinic. Lori Tyne Brody is physical therapist and athletic trainer with the UW Sports Medicine and Spine Center. And they will be back, and we'll do it again. And tomorrow, Phil Pelletieri will be with us to talk about the world of insects. Stay with us here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.